Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharne Niravishesha Shunyavadi Paschatte Deshatani. We just sung Jai Radha Madhava. Should be Radha Madhava, isn't it? Krishna's name is Madhava or Madhava? What do you think? Madhava, Kunja. Gopi Jandavallabha. If you say Gopi Jandavallabha, means he's the wife of the gopis. Becomes female. Gopi Jandavallabha, Giri Varita. Yashoda Nandana. Again, Nandana becomes female. Yashoda Nandana, Vraja Jana Ranjana. And it should be Yamuna Tira, not Yamuna. The river's name is Yamuna, but when used as an adjective, as in this case, in Sanskrit, it becomes Yamuna, just as Mathura becomes Mathura. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yesterday, I was speaking on Bhu, the name of Krishna as Bhu. Baladev Vidyabhushan, who is our Gauriya Vaishnava commentator on Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, says that this means Dhruvaloka, among whom all the other planets revolve. And others also say that, the Vishnu Purana says that Dhruva is in the tail of the Shishumara group of stars. That means he's at the top, because the Shishumara is conceived of as an inverted porpoise. And thus the Dhruva is that around which everything else spins, and Shishuma is considered a form of Bhagavan. Another meaning given is that Bhu, the supporter, who means Adi Sheshu, supports the earth. The earth is generally taken to be the support of everything, but Adi Shesh is the support of the earth. So name 439 is Dharma Yupa. Dharma, everyone's heard this word. It's one of those words which everyone's heard of, but no one's really quite sure what it means. Simply put, Dharmam Hisakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. Dharma is that which is ordained by the Supreme Lord. That's a general definition. But it's one of those things like mind or color, and it's an abstract noun, a concept, which everyone understands, but if we try to precisely define it, it becomes very difficult. One point, as we hear, all of us who are trying to practice dharma in this age of adharma, those of us who live in India, which for all of you, you probably couldn't imagine anything else because you're born in this country and you don't have experience of living outside, with the exception of one of you here. For those of us who live in India, we can see all around us dharma decreasing. And those who have been aware of dharma for, say, at least 20 years or so, they can see how the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam about the decline of dharma, the truth of that, tatascānudinam dharma satyam socham kshamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshantayo bhalang smritihi. Beginning his description of the symptoms of Kali Yuga in a system, of course, elsewhere in Bhagavatam that's stated, but in this 12th chapter, there's one chapter specifically dedicated to that. So beginning that chapter, Shukadev says that, addressing Maharaj Parikshit, says that with the passing of every single day in Kali Yuga, dharma will decrease. Not only dharma, but truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy. Of course, these are all aspects of dharma. And lifespan, bodily strength, mental strength, memory, all these things, they will decrease day by day. So we're seeing that, and to the extent that, in my memory, I have been in India, at least consciously aware of being in India for longer than any of you, because when I came to India, none of you were born when I first came. I think that's correct. Or even if you were born, you were still very young and not very cognizant of what was going on in the world. So at that time in India, there was still some sense of dharma. But nowadays, not. You may say, well, definitely there is. There's Hindu dharma and Musliman dharma. But that's part of the problem, because people think that dharma is some sectarian system of religion. But the concern with dharma that is central to Vedic culture was still there to some extent when I first came here. But nowadays, it's not there. The concern with dharma, as we'll see, expressed again and again in Shastra. For instance, Arjuna, when he protested to Krishna about this fight, he didn't want to partake in it. His reason given, his main reason for not wanting to fight was not that he was a coward, not that it was due to affection to family members and friends and others, but adharma pibhavat Krishna. He says that by engaging in this fight, there will be adharma. It will be against dharma. It will be non-dharma. So dharma means that which is right, that which is proper. Simply put, that which is good, so that which should be done. Almost everyone has a sense that there is good and bad, unless people are very amoral, very much in the lowest mode of material nature. They have a sense that something is good and something is bad. It's good to help people who are in need of help, for instance. It's bad to take advantage of others' weaknesses for one's own self-aggrandizement. So people have there's a general sense is there in all human societies, but that is getting lost in the modern age, where it's considered, there are not many people will directly say this, but one's own personal interest is considered prominent. Maybe this derives from the theory of the survival of the fittest, or from atheism in general, where atheists in the Western world are often challenged that, well, there's no basis to morality unless there's some absolute principle. And actually that's a fact, because if we say that everything is all chemicals, there's no spiritual dimension to existence, then what does it matter, for instance, if one set of chemicals grouped together as a human body picks up another set of chemicals grouped together as a hammer and vigorously raises it and lowers it on another set of chemicals grouped together as another human body? In other words, what's wrong if someone smashes someone else on the head repeatedly with a hammer? And if we take it that everything is all chemicals, then what does it matter ultimately? But even the staunchest proponents of atheism in the modern age, the top three in the mass media's attention being Richard Dawkins, he's number one, Sam Harris, probably number two, Daniel Dennett, number three, and number four was number two, but now he's gone to meet his creator who he doesn't believe in. In other words, he died, and that was Christopher Hitchens. So they all believe in the sense of right and wrong, but they can't justify it. There's no underlying basis to it. So this concept of dharma, it's more than just right. Well, I guess we can say it is a sense of what is right and what is wrong, but it's much more sophisticated than in other cultures. It's much more sophisticated in the sense that it's understood that dharma also includes a sense of cosmic harmony. That it's not just if you hit someone on the head. I mean, there may be cases where hitting someone on the head is actually a good thing to do. For instance, some years ago, I think it was just a day or two before I was flying into LAX, Los Angeles International Airport, someone pulled out a gun and started shooting people in the El Al check-in line. El Al is the Israeli Airlines. So one of the security guards in the airport, he shot that terrorist dead. So normally just to pull out a gun and shoot someone is bad, but in this case, because he was shooting other people, it was considered good. So what is generally considered bad can sometimes be good, and vice versa. So the concept of dharma is very subtle. This name is very important, Dharmayupa, because it gives the understanding that Vishnu is the basis of dharma, because the impersonalists, they have a sense of cosmic harmony, but it doesn't go beyond that. Their idea is that there's no support. They're also atheists in one sense, although the followers of Shankara would hotly deny that they're atheists. But in the true sense of the term, they are atheists, because they will accept Dharmayupa. Yes, Vishnu is the maintainer of dharma, but then they think that Vishnu himself is not ultimately a real entity. For them, ultimately, dharma is illusion. Yupa, you may be wondering what this word yupa means. Yupa means a stake or a stick which is stuck in the ground, solidly stuck in the ground, to which an animal is attached, tied up. Particular, of course, there may be so many animals tied up. It's a common thing that we see in India today. It's not seen much in the Western world. But it's common even in India today that the cows are tied to a peg which is put in the ground, so the cows, they're given some rope so they have some room to move, but they can't move very far. In this area we don't see it. There's the better system here of grazing, but it's mostly goats that are being grazed here. But this, the commentators particularly say that it, the yupa here, the stake to which the animal is tied, particularly means the stake for tying the animal who is to be sacrificed. So that's another major part of Vedic culture. There are all these points are interlinked. Dharma, Yajna, Vishnu. They're all interlinked. Yajna vai Vishnuhu. Yajna is Vishnu. Yajna. Translated as sacrifice. So the point is that dharma is tied to Vishnu. It's inseparable from Vishnu. So we may think, well, I follow dharma and I consider that Shiva is the basis of all dharma. But that's incorrect. It's Vishnu. And Shiva is also totally interlinked with dharma. He's non-different from Vishnu in many important ways, but he's also different. So the ultimate support of everything is Vishnu. So these are all subtle points to understand, but they're very important points to understand. That there is dharma. Atheists, they don't believe that there's some ultimate cosmic, not only harmony, but there's some cosmic judgment system. Or they may believe it, but they have a perverse attitude to it. Just like Duryodhana. He fully accepted the concept of dharma. But he thought that everything he did was right. He thought that, well, my father, he was the rightful inheritor to the throne, but he couldn't occupy the throne because he was blind. But we're not blind. I'm his son and I'm not blind, so why shouldn't I take the throne? It becomes, this kind of thing becomes, can become difficult to understand. It might seem to be a fair claim, but then if Pandu becomes the rightful heir to the throne, never mind that his elder son also has children, has sons, but then the sons of Pandu, or the eldest son of Pandu, according to the law of Pramajanatur. Prabhupada, he knew that word. He used it's an uncommon English word. So Prabhupada knew that word. It means that the first son, he inherits the throne. So Yudhishthira was the rightful inheritor to the throne. But it happened, a very complex situation. The Mahabharata presents so many complex situations in the history of the universe in which it's not easy to understand what is actual dharma. Becomes difficult to understand. It would seem that, well, Dhritarashtra was at home, his sons were at home, so they should, he was acting as the king, even though he was blind. it was actually a very dangerous situation if anyone had attacked the kingdom at that time, because there was no grown king. Pandu died and his sons were young. They weren't of the proper age to, Yudhishthira wasn't old enough to take charge as the king. And Dhritarashtra's sons were also young. They were the same age, more or less. Duryodhana was the same age as Bhima. So Dhritarashtra was, for all intents and purposes, ruling the kingdom under the guidance of Vidura. So then, practically, he was the king. He's addressed as the king. We find in Bhagavad Gita that Sanjay repeatedly addresses him as Rajan, as king. So he practically had that situation. But actually, the kingdom should have been given to Yudhishthira. But Dhritarashtra was unwilling to do that. Especially Duryodhana was unwilling to do that. And he thought he had a rightful claim to the crown. And when Duryodhana was dying, having been apparently wrongly killed, struck in a way that was against the laws of Dharma by Bhima, at the instigation of Krishna, then as he was dying, Duryodhana said, I'm not afraid to die. I've led a good life. I did so many yajnas. I maintained so many Brahmins. I gave charity in Brahmins. I ruled the kingdom fairly. I'm not afraid. But you took the kingdom by unfair means. You killed your guru by two of your gurus by unfair means. You killed me by unfair means. He didn't say anything about Ashwatthama killing all the soldiers of the Pandavas by unfair means. But he thought, yeah, I've led a good life, better than you, so I'm not afraid to die. I've lived according to Dharma, he said. He thought that. And there are other cases of demons also who know that there is Dharma. Hiranyakashipu understood that there is Dharma, but he thought that he can become so powerful that he doesn't have to follow Dharma, or he can redefine it by his own strength. He can upset the universal order. So you can say these are Vedic demons. Were they better than present demons who don't believe in any Dharma or never even heard of it? Are they better? Well, it's difficult to say. Wet stool and dry stool. Is stool better if it's green color or yellow color or black color or brown color? Take your pick. Which kind of stool do you want? It's difficult to say which is better or which is worse. These are demons, of course. We can say ultimately Shishupal, Dantavakra, they're better because they got killed directly by Vishnu. So that's their good fortune. It means they were worse in the sense that they were such demons that the Lord himself had to come and kill them to get rid of them. But they ultimately, their destination is better because they're directly killed by the Supreme Lord. Or in the case of Duryodhana and his 99 sons, they were killed in the presence of Krishna by a devotee of Krishna. So Dharma is inseparable from Krishna. In our Gaudiya Siddhanta, ultimately this worldly Dharma, we call it Sadharan Dharma, which means ordinary Dharma, worldly Dharma, Lokic Dharma, Dharma of this world. We don't give so much importance to it because it tends to tie one to this world. In that sense, someone who is very much interested in all these things, they can become tied to this world by dharma. And that's the condition of the smart, the persons who are called smartas. They're very much interested in following all the rules and regulations of the Vedic literature, but they don't have a transcendental objective. I'm not talking about today's smart coffee drinking smarters who go to their office in their pants and shirt and watch cricket on the TV. That's got nothing to do. They're not real. They're just, it's a caste. Practically, you can say it's a caste. They're not real smarters at all. The real smarters would be Shukracharya. He's a materialistic, following the rules and regulations, but without proper concern for Vishnu. They may even chant Vishnu Sahasranam. We're going through Vishnu Sahasranam. Vishnu Sahasranam is highly rated by smartas because it destroys all your sinful activities to chant it. They're very interested to destroy their sinful activities so that they can go on being pious smartas, life after life, following the Smriti Shastra or the Dharma Shastras. When we say Smriti, the Smritis mean, or the Dharma Shastra means rules of how to live in this world according to Dharma. How to live in a pious way so that in your next life you can again get born as a smart and go on being pious, or you can go to the heavenly planets. So actually all these rules and regulations, they are given by Vishnu, although some are more suitable for demoniac-minded people. Which might sound strange, but the Vedic corpus or the Vedic culture gives opportunity even for demoniac-minded people to at least live within the realm of Vedic culture. They may think they're very pious, but their rules and regulations which they follow, which don't carry them toward Vishnu. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says that any following of dharma, which doesn't ultimately raise us to Krishna consciousness, is useless. Ultimately, it's useless. So, Gauriya Vaishnavas, they're not so much concerned. Na dharma, dharma, what is that? Raghunath Das Goswami says, he's not concerned with dharma or adharma. It's a really revolutionary statement to make. Nowadays, if you say that, it's not revolutionary because people are already in that situation. Not on the platform of Raghunath Das, not that they transcended dharma and adharma, but they just don't know anything about it. They're below, they're on, that means they're on the animal platform. Sometimes we hear in ISKCON also, we don't care about all this dharma. That's not for Vaishnavas. But they think they've transcended it. Actually, they haven't even come to the platform of dharma. As can be seen in their, for instance, multiple divorces and remarriages and so on and so on. This name is very important. Krishna himself states the reason that he comes to this world, yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Krishna comes to this world whenever there is a decline in dharma and he reestablishes it. So Krishna is very concerned that there should be dharma in this world. So dharma is united with him, and particularly in the description of the universal form, it said that his head is dharma. Sometimes it said his front, the front side of him is dharma, and the back side is adharma. And in the Taittiriya Aranyaka, Tasmaya Namastachira Dharma, offering respect to him whose head is dharma. And dharma, of course, is that which sustains. Also, dharayati iti dharma. So that fits with the previous name, bhu, the earth, that which sustains. So this sustenance of everything that is particularly overseen by Vishnu. He oversees creation, maintenance, and destruction. But particularly maintenance, creation is, the job is delegated to Brahma. The destruction of the universe is delegated to Shiva. But Vishnu personally oversees maintenance. He's within every atom, within the heart of every living being, and from inside he's holding everything together. So that's one function of Vishnu, maintaining as dharma. Now, if we take this metaphor, I guess, or analogy further, dharma yupa, he is the stake to which dharma is tied. We may say, well, sacrificial animal, what does that mean, that the animal is taken away and killed? Well, of course, dharma is never killed, but in the Vedic sacrifices, the animal is killed for the sake of reviving, to show the efficacy of the Vedic mantras. So in the same way, Krishna allows dharma to decline and then he restores it. You may say, well, why does he allow it to decline? The reason is that the sinful inhabitants of this world, they wanted to decline. When we say that dharma declines day by day, people who are inclined to dharma will think this is something bad, and other people think, well, this is very good. There are people who think that's good. We don't want all these dharma, all these rules. What are these rules? Recently I was in America, and in a college town, there was a program, many students were there. And I said, in Vedic culture, women, they marry, then they remain married, not only women, men and women marry, and then they remain married throughout their life. And there was a protest that, well, why? What's wrong with divorce? If they want, then get divorced and marry again, and what's wrong with that? So they thought the idea of being tied up in a marriage, something very bad. It's better. We don't have all the dharma, religious rules. They're not good. We don't want that. When I was a child, there was a song which was very popular for some time. Not for a few weeks. That means if for a few weeks a song can be popular, that means it's a big hit, as they call it. So the words went something like this. I quoted it in Women, Masters and Mothers. I found it on the internet. Please release me, let me go. It's supposed to be the prayer of one partner in a relationship. Please release me, let me go. To waste our lives would be a sin, so release me and let me love again. In other words, they're married or they're living together or whatever, and he doesn't want to remain in that relationship. He thinks, I don't like it. I don't like it. That is dharma for Kali Yuga. That is the highest moral principle. Do I like it or I don't like it? If that which I like is dharma, that which I don't like is adharma. Well, that's true if you're Vishnu, which everyone except Vishnu is not Vishnu. But because we think, Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham balavan sukhi. I'm meant to be in control here. By the way, everybody else. I'm supposed to enjoy everything. I'm perfect. I'm powerful. I'm happy. Then we take that the highest dharma is that oneself should be satisfied. So the idea that, well, we have a responsibility to a higher authority, that idea is not there. So people want that there should be a decline. People want that there should be, we don't want all these rules.
Well, there are all these rules. In ISKCON also, we don't rule. We just want to do kirtan, that's all. We want to do kirtan. I want to do kirtan. But kirtan means we should do for Krishna's pleasure. We may like to do, but it's meant to be for Krishna's, first and centrally for Krishna's pleasure. And naturally we become happy also. But if we think, oh, I want to do kirtan, okay, all right, that was nice, okay. Now what do I want to do? Let's see what's on TV. That's what I want to do. Everything is judged by what I want to do. So this is not dharma. But people want that there should be no rule. Let us live freely. In other words, they just want to be animals. That's all. No rules, no dharma. And an animal cannot have a sense of dharma. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samaname tat pashubhya naranam. Dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. Animals and humans both eat, sleep, fear, fight, defend. But humans can have a sense of dharma. Animals can't. So if a human doesn't have a sense of dharma, and I'm not talking here about I'm a Hindu, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, not this, but actually understanding who is the Supreme Lord and what He wants and acting in accord with that. Even at the worldly stage, sadharan dharma or samanya dharma, general dharma, if we don't recognize there is a higher authority to whom we are answerable, then we're just like animals. And another difference between animals and humans is because they don't have dharma, then they're not responsible. If an animal kills another animal, he doesn't get a sinful reaction. If a human kills a human, except under certain circumstances, then he is responsible. He'll get a sinful reaction. So Bhagavan allows dharma to decline. Why? Why is there Kali Yuga? Because we want it. The sinful souls of Kali Yuga, they want it. So they're given that opportunity. When their adharma, when their sense of malice toward others increases more and more and more, they're given the opportunity to be born in Kali Yuga. Of course, very pious people may also take birth in Kali Yuga for the sake of chanting Hare Krishna. Or those who are very sinful, they in such a totally degraded situation, they may be saved by the chanting of the holy names. So we should follow dharma and be sadharan dharma. Devotees shouldn't think, well, we're beyond all that. Even if we, beyond all that means if we are fully absorbed in love of Krishna. If we are fully absorbed in love of Krishna, still we should follow dharma for the sake of giving good example to others. Anyway, I've spoken on these topics many times. And I probably will do many more times. Also, So we should tie ourselves, if we tie ourselves up to Vishnu, or allow ourselves to be tied to Vishnu, yoga, if we're linked with Krishna by yoga, bhakti yoga, then automatically we follow dharma. That is the inner meaning of dharma, to be attached to Krishna. Yeah, any question about this, please? Or comment? No one attacked at that time. Yeah, Bhishma was. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. Pitamaha, Bhishma. No one could attack. he could single-handedly defeat any opposing kings. Though he didn't have to. Having not married, which was considered adharma by some, he could have just been a renunciant. Oh, you have something more to say on this point? Oh, okay, then I'll take.
Brahmana, see that never leaves his dharma, whatever the situation is.
Brahmana should never leave his dharma. Well, Shastra gives allowance for him to act as a kshatriya or a vaishya in apadharma. If he's not able for some reason to practice his role as a brahmana, he may, as long as there is an emergency, act as a kshatriya or a vaishya. So the statement you made is not correct, according to Shastra, including Bhagavatam. In certain circumstances, he may, not in general circumstances. Nowadays, all the brahmanas, so-called, those who consider themselves brahmanas, they're mostly shudras, they're working for a salary. Some of them have their own private business, which is something like a vaishya, but a vaishya is also supposed to do business according to dharma. It's practically impossible in the modern age to properly follow dharma because the whole society is overtaken by demons. So the traditional way of following dharma is very, very difficult. That is one of the goals of the Krishna conscious movement, to reestablish the Vedic society, at least microcosmically, as far as possible. Yeah, what's your question?
Prabhupada mentioned that in presence of Krishna, when they left the body in Kurukshetra,
yeah,
they went back to God.
Yeah, yeah. All of those who died in the Battle of Kurukshetra, because they died in Krishna's presence, they all got delivered back home, back to Godhead. Duryodhana, everyone. Although the Mahabharata tells, the Mahabharata, as we have it, tells a different story. There's also Jaimini Mahabharata, most of which is lost, which is a much more devotional version. This Mahabharata we have is the one which is extant in the world, although when I say one, there are so many different recensions, but it's basically the same story. That's more geared for people on the platform of worldly dharma. Still, a lot of Krishna consciousness comes through.
Explain the meaning of stake. I've heard a phrase in English, burned at the stake.
Burned at the stake. You want to know what that English phrase means? It means that a stake is put firmly in the ground. Wood is piled all around it, a person is tied to the stake, and the wood is set on fire. And it's called burned at the stake. It's a system of execution which the Islamic State didn't think about yet. Maybe they think it's non-Islamic because it was popular among Christians in Europe in the medieval times, so maybe they think it's only for kafirs or something like that. It's got nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, but I hope that satisfied your curiosity. There are many burned at the stake. In France, Joan of Arc, famous, burned by the English. And there are so many. That's also in Vedic culture. There was self burning to death. But who is that? Mandana Mishra? Was it? He burned himself to death on a slow fire with this rice husks, which will burn very slowly. So it's a really torturous death. because he thought he'd committed a guru aparad. Because for the sake of defeating the Buddhists, he pretended to become a Buddhist, because he wanted to learn their philosophy for the sake of defeating it. And yeah, it was Mandana Mishra. Yeah. Then, who was a great acharya, if you could say, of the Kama Mimamsa school. So, anyway, he became discovered that he was actually an imposter. So he jumped from a height because the Buddhists, they say the Vedas are not true. So he jumped from a height in the presence of his Buddhist classmates and said, if the Vedas are not true, then may I die. If they're true, may they protect me. So he landed and he didn't die. But he did damage one eye. So when Shankaracharya came to meet him, first of all, he didn't want to meet him because no one wanted to see Shankara because they thought a sannyasi is very inauspicious to see a sannyasi because according to their karma mimamsa, because they think anyone who takes sannyas, that's against dharma because the aim of life is to enjoy the world, life after life. You do sacrifices, you go to the heavenly planets. What's all this? Becoming a sannyasi and becoming liberated from the world. They thought this was our dharma. So Mandana Mishra, he didn't want to meet with him, but he said, I can't, because Shankara wanted to discuss with him. He said, I can't discuss with you now because I'm burning myself to death because I committed an offense to my guru. Because I took instruction from him, but I wasn't actually a proper disciple. So he, after considering it, he thought I should burn myself. And his one eye was damaged. He said, why did my one eye become damaged? Because I said, if the Vedas are untrue. So by putting it in that way, I presented the possibility that the Vedas are not true. So for that, my one eye got damaged. He was blind in one eye. So this is all in the biography of Shankara. So you get this idea of that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Radharani feels she's in a tushanala, she's burning on a rice husk flower fire. It was a very slow, tortuous way to die in separation from Krishna. So that idea is there. If you really want to torture someone. So I'm saying the Islamic State, they didn't discover that one yet. Maybe it'd be a good business for India. They can export this rice husks. they can burn people slowly to death. Can suggest to Modi, can make some contract with them. Can import oil in exchange for rice husks. That's not a very nice joke, is it? Yeah.
Can we understand Dharma Yuga as Vishnu as center of dharma?
Vishnu as the center of dharma. Yeah, I mean, the animal can go round and round, but he's tied to dharma. So yeah, that example is given in the Bhagavatam also, that the animals, just everyone is tied to dharma, and as the animals are tied to a rod in the ground, they can only go round and round, they can't go anywhere. So in the same way, the wind must blow, the fire must burn, the planets must move, because they're tied, they have their own particular nature that's given to them by Vishnu. Yeah, who was that? I had a question. Yeah.
Actually, to understand dharma,
Materialistic intelligence is needed, or spiritual intelligence is sufficient?
Materialistic
intelligence is needed.
Material intelligence is needed. Intelligence is needed, and purification is needed also to properly understand it. Many of the commentators, they just say it's very subtle and it's not possible to fully understand. Unless we accept Vishnu, unless we accept the Vedic Vaishnav worldview, then it's very difficult to understand exactly what Dharma is, both as a concept to fully define it, and individual individual instances of it also. And the whole Mahabharata, as I was saying, it's full of this dharma sankat. You don't know what to do. If I do this, it seems wrong. If I do that, it seems wrong. Arjuna was in that situation. If I fight, it seems wrong. And if I don't fight, it seems wrong. So, but I have to do one of the two. So he just asked Krishna, you tell me, just tell me. You know, talking all these complex ideas. Just tell me what's right and what's wrong. But Krishna wouldn't. He wanted him to understand himself. And at the end, Krishna asked him, so have you understood? And then Arjuna said, yes, I'm going to fight. So does it require, by material intelligence, one can't understand anything very clearly. Especially when we start talking about the order of the universe, the subtleties of the universe, the conscious underpinning of the universe. The gross materialists, they can't understand that consciousness is... They can't even understand the phenomenon of consciousness. What to speak of the super consciousness that links all other individual units of consciousness. So spiritual intelligence is required to properly understand all these things. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.